Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, have you heard the one about a priest and a Protestant professor walking into a radio show? Well, it's about to happen in real life, in real time, right now. This is Cale Clark, and welcome to the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is a toll-free line to call. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, and follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Well, what are these guys going to do? This priest and Protestant professor, they're going to join me on this radio program and raise a toast along with me. I wish I had some fine Bavarian wheat beer, which is my favorite, to share with them, to raise a toast, if you will, we'll at least do it virtually, to the life, to the legacy of the great Pope Benedict XVI, who was laid to rest today earlier in Rome. He passed away, of course, at the age of 95 on New Year's Eve on December the 31st, just a few days ago. And here's a clip from the funeral that took place earlier today in Rome.
Together we want to say, Father, into your hands we commend his spirit.
Benedetto, fedele amico dello sposo, che la tua gioia sia perfetta nell'udire definitivamente e per sempre la sua voce.
And Pope Francis concluded his homily, Benedict, faithful friend of the bridegroom, may your joy be complete as you hear his voice now and forever.
And of course, Pope Francis presiding over the funeral mass in Rome today. And joining me to talk about this, a couple of great friends of the program. Father Harrison Ayer is with me, probably best known as the co-host of the incredibly popular Clerically Speaking podcast. He's also the author of the amazing book Mysterion, all about sacramental worldview. I love it. Published by Pauline Books and Media. Also the pastor of St. Peter's Parish, doctoral student at the Maryville Institute. He wears a lot of hats. He's pretty busy, and I thank him for taking the time to join us today. And also, we are joined by Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins at Houston Christian University. Scott Hahn calls him the greatest living Bible scholar in the English-speaking world. High praise, very well deserved. The author or editor of more than 100 books, including the very gorgeous book that recently came out, Jesus and the Manuscripts, published by Hendrickson. I can't list all his publications here. Jesus and His World, the Archaeological Evidence, the Magisterial Commentary put out on Mark's Gospel and the Word Biblical Series. Too much to name here. But Dr. Evans, Father Harrison, thank you so much for taking the time today. Really appreciate you being here with me.
Good to be with you, Cale. Father Harrison, I look forward to hearing your comments.
Yeah, and this is the first time that that Father Harrison has spoken to Dr. Evans. And Father Harrison, I'm assuming you're on the line. Are you with me? Okay. We're going to try to get Father Harrison. We may have to call him back. But let me start with you, Dr. Evans. Where were you? What were you doing when you heard the news of Pope Benedict's passing? What was your initial reaction to it?
Well, we knew it was coming. We'd heard, you know, only days before that he was very ill, and the Vatican was deeply concerned, and, you know, there were requests to pray for him. So, and he's 95, so he had not been in good health for many years, so I wasn't surprised. And in a way, I was relieved for him that he would be at peace, and he was such a good soul. So it's our loss, it's heaven's gain. And, I mean, what a great life, what a great man, and of course he was an outstanding pope.
Absolutely, and we've got Father Harrison reconnected now. Father, welcome back to the program. We had a bit of a glitch there, but I just asked Dr. Evans this question. I'll ask this to you as well. Where were you, what were you up to when you first heard the news of the passing of Pope Benedict and your initial thoughts on that when you heard it?
Yeah, a miracle had happened. I was forced into silence for a moment because I forgot to unmute. what had happened was I had woken up that morning and I took my phone off airplane mode And I was inundated with texts and phone calls for like 8 hours straight. So from friends and people who know that I am close to him and stuff like this. So it was, I think for me, honestly, I mean, yeah, I was expecting it as well. I saw it coming. I mean, there was photos mm-hmm. being released a while for him being looking very frail.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and he is. Yeah. He's 95. So sadness isn't the right word. I think there is a bit of a missing, but he has been silent for so long in a way that.
And I think we may have lost Father Harrison again. I'm going to ask maybe Producer Jim, if you could just maybe call him back. We'll get him reconnected. But Dr. Evans, when did you become first aware of this person, Joseph Ratzinger, who became, of course, Pope Benedict XVI? When did you recall first hearing about him and his work?
Well, I heard about him when he was Pope John Paul II's right-hand man, theologically mm-hmm. speaking. He was a very close advisor because Pope John Paul II, knew him. I thought it was a great personal relationship because Pope John Paul II is Polish, and Benedict or Joseph Ratzinger mm-hmm. was German. And, of course, there was a lot of animosity following World War II, as you can mm-hmm. imagine. Germany invaded Poland, and both of these men, you know, they were alive and active during those years. And I think they demonstrated how people could forgive, representing their own peoples, there could be forgiveness and conciliation. And so they were a tremendous testimony in that sense. So I was aware of him. And he was a force to be reckoned with. Ratzinger was a respected theologian, and what really impressed me was when he began publishing these books on the historical Jesus, and this was mm-hmm. before he became Pope. Wow. I mean, he was not just an ordinary theologian, but a very gifted scholar who read widely and knew how to exegete texts. And, of course, what I'm saying right now, I'm letting show my bias as a biblical scholar, because we mm-hmm. biblical scholars often look down our very academic ivory tower noses at the theologians who might not know how to deal with the text real well. I mean, there they are. Mm-hmm. You know, they're up in their own tower with theology and philosophy and everything. And we're saying, hey, you need to get your feet back on the ground and look at the text and know what it says. Well, Cardinal Ratzinger knew how to do that. And so when he wrote theology, it was extremely well-informed biblically. And before the show began, you know, knowing that this was coming up this evening, I got out mm-hmm. my Ratzinger books. I was just leafing through them. I reread what he said about the virgin birth. I was just blown away. The guy is simply brilliant. And so he was on the radar. We knew who he was. And I think there was a lot of very positive reaction when he succeeded John Paul II
mm-hmm. yeah.
in 2005, I believe. And we all knew he'd be a great pope, and he didn't let anybody down. He was a great pope.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously one of the most reluctant popes in all of history. He did not want the job. And the former papal spokesman, Joaquin Navarro-Valls, related an anecdote after the death of John Paul II, and of course, Pope Benedict, the future Pope Benedict and Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger presided over the funeral mass of JP2, and he preached a very famous homily on the eve of the conclave that would eventually elect him as successor, and he talked about, that's where he first, to my knowledge, that's the first time he dropped that phrase, the dictatorship of relativism. And a lot of people, when he said that, a lot of people thought, oh, I guess this guy's not going to be Pope because he's just kind of laying it out there. This is exactly, he's just dropping truth bombs here and diagnosing the culture and all of its issues. And maybe he's not going to be that conciliatory figure that they're looking for. Anyways, but Joaquin Navarro-Valls said that he had a conversation with Cardinal Ratzinger after that. And And people at the time, after the death of JP2, were crying out, as they are now for Pope Benedict, Santo Subito, sainthood now, let's canonize this guy now, JP2. And Navarro-Valls said that Cardinal Ratzinger told him, hey, the question was, should we shut this down and tell people, that's not really how it works, there's a process to this, there's a canonization process that could take a long time, should we tell people to kind of stop saying this? And he said, Cardinal Ratzinger said, well, my successor is going to have to figure all that stuff out. Let's leave it the Pope's successor is going to have to figure that one out. Let's leave it for him. Basically saying he didn't think it was going to be him. He didn't think it was going to be him at all. And he talks about this in his writings, how he felt like kind of the guillotine falling on his neck. That he, once he saw the votes were going to go his way, and he just wanted to go back to Bavaria, write theology, write biblical studies, study, pray. And he said, oh man, it's going to be me. And he realized that. And of course, he gave himself to the will of God. But he, when he was working for JP2, he had submitted his resignation numerous times. And the Pope kept saying, no, I need you here. I need you here. And once again, he had to sort of answer the call. And he did that with incredible aplomb. And we got Father Harrison back on the line here. And Father Harrison, glad to have you reconnected. I want to ask you, like, when in your journey, in your spiritual journey, did you first become aware of Joseph Ratzinger / Benedict XVI?
Yeah, so I had I wasn't really raised much in the faith, baptized as a baby, didn't really go to church at all growing up, and then had a conversion in 2004. And I'd say about a couple months after that, part of it was that youthful performativeness, right? Like, what's the cool stuff to be following? And there was this guy named Ratzinger, and there was like a Ratzinger fan club online. And so it was like this cool thing to be a fan of the guy, the head of the CDF for it, everything like this, right? So, you know, I found out about him, and I remember the first book I read was called To Communion, which I understood about 50% of it at the time, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I was really touched by his theology. And so that's when I kind of first heard about him. And then in those last days of JP2 and everything, you're thinking, and he was really at the time the only cardinal I really knew of decently. And so without any forethought, I thought, oh, it's going to be Ratzinger. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that funeral and hearing that homily. And after that homily, I said, he just talked himself into the papacy.
Yeah, that's interesting, because many people said he talked himself out of it, but, you know, not that he was looking for it, but you may be right. I mean, that might have been the thing that cemented in the other cardinals' minds, like, we have to pick this guy.
Yeah, and I mean, there were cardinals kind of hinting towards him that he has to be the guy, etc., after such a major figure. And really, so much of what John Paul did was thanks to the help and the background work of Ratzinger. Like, a lot of what JP2 was able to pull off was because of Ratzinger. So I think there's a lot of that continuity sense. But his humility towards the truth is such that he will preach what he believes has to be said in this moment. And he knows, like, millions upon millions of people are going to be there and watching from around the world. It is his time for Christ to speak anew to a world that is attentive to him for the first time in maybe ages. I know countless people who converted just because of JP2's funeral. And so he knew that this, he had to say what was on his heart in this moment. And, it was one of those things because he did. And I think the homily is pure Ratzinger for two reasons. Yes, he does a great diagnosis. He talks about the problems the church faces and the world faces and what man faces and the blocking out of God. But he also has that Bavarian piety where he talks about, like, John Paul II waving from the window of heaven at us, right? And that's him in a nutshell. He had that, like, I remember someone saying he has the intellect of 12 professors and the piety of a child who just had his first communion.
Wow. That's an incredible thing to say.
It's actually a good way of summing him up. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, because I'm reminded of a quote from another saint, Saint Jose Maria Escrivá, who used to say, you know, you should really have the doctrine of theologians and the piety of children. And certainly he had that. Benedict had that. And he talked about that. I read a quote about him, kind of what he said he thought heaven might be like. And he started reflecting on growing up in Bavaria as a small child and how happy he was, like, with his family, and just that feeling of freedom. He says, I kind of feel like it might be like that, the happiness of a child's life and going home. I really feel like it's going to be about going home. And he obviously has made that final journey. Now, we got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but I'm joined by Father Harrison Ayer, Dr. Craig Evans. We're talking about the legacy of Benedict XVI, and we'll be back right after this break. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
What a momentous day on Relevant Radio on the Cale Clark Show, the show of record for today. Pope Benedict laid to rest earlier in Rome, Pope Francis presiding. And it doesn't have that feel of sadness. We talked about this before the break. I'm joined by Father Harrison Ayer, Dr. Craig Evans, biblical scholar, talking about the life, the legacy of Benedict. And I feel like today was really a celebration of that. And Dr. Evans, obviously the books of Pope Benedict, and a lot of it was due to the fact that he was elected pope, but in their own right, a lot of them were just bestsellers all throughout his life. And many authors who write bestsellers, they might, you know, buy a beach house in Monaco or something like that. Obviously, he wasn't going to do that. What did he do with some of the resources from his book sales? It's a pretty interesting story.
Well, it's my understanding that most of the income from the sales of his books, which are just outstanding, created a foundation. I think it's called the Ratzinger Foundation, but I'm not sure of that. And it funded a conference that I myself attended. And of course, the whole point of it was to explore further his own work on the historical Jesus. He was writing these books. He wrote three of them, as it turned out, in 2007, 2011, and 2012. On the life of Jesus. And so he convened a conference in Rome that took place, as it turned out, months after he'd retired. And so our host pope was Francis. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a wonderful thing to do. And it was, must have been 50 scholars from around the world, North America, and of course Europe, obviously, but other places as well, to discuss Christology, the doctrine of Christ, both in history and in theology. And I thought it was a very worthwhile thing. Most of us stayed in the Vatican itself, in the St. Martha Hotel, and it was wonderful to meet all these scholars from all over the world and talk about what I think is the most important thing, you know, the incarnate Son of God, Christ, and how he's understood in history. And so there was biblical studies, historical studies, but also how he's understood in theology. And so it was a very rich experience. It was very well done. And it was, the whole thing was funded thanks to Pope Benedict's, royalties is what it all amounted to. And I thought, I'm an academic, and so I can't think of a better way of spending money. Don't buy a yacht or don't buy a summer house. Create a foundation so scholars can get together and read papers and produce books.
I love it. And there were two volumes, very impressive volumes, and I've seen them. You've showed them to me, and it's like, and again, these are if you're guys like us, you covet these things, right? These are where you really struggle with coveting. Oh, I want this book. This is incredible. So the two-volume set that came out of this conference, the first Joseph Ratzinger conference, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I can. It's one of the most astounding things I've ever been part of. Cale, the conference was the last couple of days of October and the first few days of November 2013. And as I said, Pope Benedict had retired, I think it was in February that year. Francis, weeks later, had been elected as the new pope. And so here we were at this conference, and Father Bernardo Estrada, mm-hmm, was one of the convening priests. He's from South America, but he's on the faculty of one of the universities there in Rome, and he was a convener. And I've known Bernardo for years and years. And so he told me we would read our papers, and 2 weeks after the conference ended, so we're talking middle of November, we would submit our revised, updated papers, and the book would come out 1 month later and be presented on Christmas Day.
That's like a lightning turnaround.
Dedicated, yeah. It's like, Bernardo, this can't happen. And, it was going to be Christmas Day. Of course, I started thinking about it. Well, wait a minute, which Christmas? You know, there are two different, maybe it's the Orthodox Christmas. Well, they split the difference. It didn't make it for the 25th. It was a few days after it, but it was before before the Orthodox Christmas Day. And so they delivered. I just, you know, it's unbelievable. So here the conference is late in the year. Papers are submitted in the middle of November. And in the calendar year 2013, the two volumes, not one, but two volumes, and the first volume's huge, they both came out. They're just beautiful. So that there was a miracle. I guess miracles still happen. And, you know, the job was done. And so kudos to Father Bernardo, who's a wonderful guy. Everybody in Rome loves him. He can't go anywhere in the city without being mobbed by people, shaking his hand and inviting him in to have gelato. He's a great guy. So they pulled it off. That was quite an experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. And when you've been on the program before, you talked about the fact that you stayed down the hall from Pope Francis in the St. Martha Hotel, and that was a lot of fun for you as well. And I want to bring in Father Harrison right now, because all this talk about Pope Benedict's writings on the historical Jesus, it kind of made me think about something that we were discussing off air, Father, and that is this. So there's a lot of talk about, and there's a lot of ink that's been spilled about the ink that he put on paper, the books of Pope Benedict the 16th. But one of the things that you were telling me is that one of the overlooked gems in the career of Pope Benedict were his Wednesday catechesis talks. And this isn't a competition. It's not a competition by any stretch of the imagination. But there's that famous saying that people used to go to Rome to see John Paul II, of course. He had a lot of dramatic gestures in his life. A lot of dramatic things happened to him. And being a former actor, he really did play that up to effect it with, for God's sake, literally. And not that he wasn't a great scholar, not that he didn't have great things to say and teach as well, because he certainly did. But it said that people came to Rome to see John Paul. They came to listen to Pope Benedict. And the audience numbers, the amount of pilgrims and other interested people who would show up in Rome to hear his Wednesday audience talks, the numbers are actually higher than JP2's. And the things that he talked about kind of do play into Jesus, what we might call the historical Jesus, especially when it comes to prayer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it's not, you're right, it's not a competition, because I think in some ways John Paul II really made the Wednesday audience an event to really gather people into Rome to see the Pope from all over the world and to get an opportunity to teach the faith. So I think John Paul II really did solidify it as an idea and the practice of the popes, and Ratzinger just ran with it. And so, and in his Wednesday audiences, though, he's a fundamental and dogmatic theologian by training, and a historical theologian secondarily, but he doesn't talk about any of that really. He does in a secondary way, but he talks about the saints, the apostles, the medieval greats, and in my favorite of them all is his catechesis on prayer, which are like theology of the body level of importance in my opinion, because you see in him, I think it gives us a glimpse into his interior life, even of his own encounter with the Lord. And he's moving, he has this great reflection on intercessory prayer and this whole, how this interceding to God is actually not so much about us getting God to do what we want, but getting in touch with God's heart and God revealing God's heart through us to the world. I'm like, whoa, this is great stuff. But at the heart of it is obviously the person of Jesus Christ. And not just in these audiences, but throughout his theological career, the prayer of Jesus becomes the central place of him seeing who is the person of Jesus. And for him, looking at the prayer of Jesus tells us that he is the Son of the Father. And that he's not just in a human way, but also in a divine way, and both at the same time. And thus we need to enter into the mystery of Jesus' prayer in all of its vastness, in order to actually understand him, and that we as Christians can actually enter into that mystery because of the gift of our baptism, the gift of the church and the liturgy. I think the prayer of Jesus for him really becomes a way for us to enter into the mystery of the liturgy, where we enter really and truly into an encounter with Christ today and are lifted up into his vision of reality. That's one of his favorite definitions of faith. Faith is a sharing in Jesus's vision of reality, God and creation. And so I think these are real gems, and they're accessible, but they are they coalesce so much of his theology, because for him, the saint is the greatest apologist. The saint is the one who shows us the face of Christ today. It is he is alive, he is active, that the saint makes that present today. And so he's trying to teach us to look to the saints, to become saints ourselves, but that the saints really are the ones who teach us. And that he always saw that, so that even in the contemporary saints who aren't canonized yet, but he would always see those saints as the little ones of faith in the church today, the people who faithfully follow and show up and pray daily. And they may not know grand theological works or anything like that, but he sees in them the heart of the church and the heart of being a saint, and the ones who protect the deposit of faith and the ones who make Christ present through the church today. And so his whole Wednesday catechesis are gold mines of growing in holiness, growing in intimacy with Christ, and growing in the great harmony of saints and all their differences that show Christ in his one body.
Yeah, I really love that, and thanks for that answer. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guests are Father Harrison Ehr, who is just speaking, alongside Dr. Craig Evans, biblical scholar. And I really like what you said, Father Harrison, about how the two topics that stood out to you the most during his Wednesday catechesis talks were talks on prayer and talks on the saints, and how each saint kind of is a manifestation of some aspect of Christ for today, or for that time period in which the saint lives, that the world needs to hear about. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think it was about Ratzinger / Pope Benedict, about him as a person, as I think someone who will be, I think he'll be a doctor of the church one day. I could be wrong, but it's not my call, but what do you think was the message that he brought to the world for this time?
God, you see this in his spiritual testimony, that God is at the center. God really is alive and active. He can actually even be seen. Even in a world where there's a kind of sickness that makes it hard to see God alive and active, we need to enter into the Christian faith that sees things through the lens of being the small grain that's thrown into the ground, the mustard seed. That humility is the only way we can actually see God alive today, but that we can see that. And I think when people went to go hear him, I think for a few reasons, because he was a great teacher. He spoke with such clarity, and like you could be the most uneducated person and you could be the most educated person, and you can all find something in his talks that would speak to you in a profound way. Mm-hmm. I think for him too, I think it was a way for him to be a teacher still in a very profound way to the universal church. You really see him being a pastor in this in its truest sense. And I think at the heart of it is there's a synthesis for him between theology and spirituality, right? Or theology and holiness. They go hand in hand. And the saint is the one who brings these two things together. And in him, you see, like he never hid his personality. It came out as it needed, and it came out, I think, most authentically in him as a teacher. And so people would want to hear this anew. And it's in a world where we don't get this on a popular level in any way, shape, or form. It's all sound bites and talking heads, and it's all politics. He's trying to show, you know, spiritual power manifests itself in weakness and in smallness, and the saint is the one who shows us this. That is such a radical message today, that there's something life-giving and countercultural, but not in a antagonistic way, but rather like you become small and enter into the culture and die for it, even so that new life can flow up within. And I think all of that kind of came through his teaching.
Yeah, I love that. It did come through in his teaching, and one of the things that he and his teaching obviously was rooted in the person of Jesus of Nazareth, and that's what he said when it came to his Jesus of Nazareth series. He said, "This is my personal search for the face of the Lord." And I want to bring back Dr. Evans into the conversation here and ask you this, Dr. Evans, because you are one of the foremost, if not the foremost, historical Jesus scholar in the world today. And if you could just maybe explain for our listening audience, what is this question, and Benedict explores this in his books. What is this question of the historical Jesus? And is there a difference between what people call the Jesus of history, quote unquote, and the Christ of faith? Can you explain that for us here?
I think I can. This has been an issue as Colin Brown, and we've talked about Colin Brown's great mm-hmm. history of the quest for the historical Jesus. He makes this point where how do you understand Jesus if you don't approach him in faith? And of course, there are all sorts of figures who are faith founders of one sort or another. And we as Christians don't necessarily believe in them, or certainly not the way their followers do. And so what do you say to a secular person? What do you say to somebody who says, okay, sure, there was Jesus of Nazareth, and I guess he was a rabbi, he was a Jewish teacher, he said a lot of nice things. His teaching clearly has benefited humanity, but I don't know if was he the Son of God? Who knows? I mean, that goes way beyond my ability to assess. So, what do you say to somebody like that? Do you sit down with that person and look at the Gospels and say, now to understand the Gospels, you have to accept everything they say in faith? And he might say, well, do you accept everything the Book of Mormon says in faith? Do you accept everything that the Quran says in faith? So what I saw in Joseph Ratzinger that was so effective was like, okay, we can look at the Gospels and we can talk about Jesus in a historical way, but at the same time, as we explore that, we can then circle around and bring faith back into the discussion. So I like what Father Harrison was saying just a couple minutes ago, where he was, Joseph Ratzinger was able to do that. And so when I look at his book, or his books on the historical Jesus, there is scholarship there. There's also theological profundity, but at the same time, there is this pastoral element where he invites the reader to embrace that faith. And so it all comes together. It's not separated, because we scholars tend to separate those things. We tend to put them in silos. And so we want to operate as scholars and not really as theologians. And we talked about, several weeks ago, we talked about Father John Meyer, who is a yes. great historical yep. Jesus scholar. And he just comes right out and says, he doesn't use the word silo, but in his very first volume, he talks about this, enclave unofficially of a Protestant, an agnostic, a Catholic. They all get together and say, we're going to look at the Gospels and figure out what we can say about the historical Jesus. Well, Joseph Ratzinger, he's doing that, but much more. He still circles around, comes back to faith. And I think he did it very effectively. And I think we need more of that instead of saying, well, let's just talk about the historical Jesus and what secular people can decide what must be true. Because I think that clips the wings a little bit, because you can't just look at Jesus through secular eyes, and that doesn't really work. But the scholarship does have a place, because if you can't say anything, if there really aren't any sources that are credible, if there is no scholarship at all behind it, then maybe we're just talking about myth. Maybe we're talking about a Jesus that didn't exist, the Jesus of Gnosticism or something like that. Mm-hmm. So scholarship definitely has its place, but we shouldn't silo it. We shouldn't stop and say we're not going to speak about theology. We're not going to talk about faith. Because I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, that's well said, Dr. Evans. And obviously, the faith is based on a historical person, historical facts. And speaking of history, back to you, Father Harrison. I know that one of the things that you wanted to talk about today that you feel hasn't been talked about enough with respect to Benedict and his contributions is his theology of history, because obviously God is not just acting in the person of Jesus of Nazareth, who, of course, was resurrected, ascended into heaven, is at the right hand of the Father, but, of course, he's also acting throughout history in his mystical body through the church. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I say this as someone who, this is at the heart of part of my dissertation topic, so of course I see it everywhere. And I think it actually dovetails well with what Dr. Evans was talking about around the historical Jesus and the relationship between faith and history and so on and so forth, because we tend to approach the idea of history as something just like purely linear, with no real beginning and no real end. And he sees this as a real problem. First, he sees history as a Christian category itself, that you can't really have the notion of history as we have it today without Christianity. And I think what Dr. Evans was kind of getting at there with the Jesus of Nazareth series, just as a small example, is he could enter into the historical method. He would never say it's the absolute thing. He can't say that as a theologian, as a Catholic, but that it points us towards the eternal truths, and that so we can encounter the historical Christ through the scriptures, through these studies, but that it points us to these theological truths that are alive and active today through the church. And so, yeah, his whole theological career is really trying to argue about the importance of the notion of history. And it really, because you see this in so much of his writings, it really starts to develop around the mid-1960s, because for him, and for him, he's always reflecting on what are the questions and problems of this time and place we're in. And so you'll see him talk about 1968 a lot, and the sexual revolution, and the student revolution, I should say.
Yep.
Although that was that too. But
that
student
too.
Revolutions in Europe. There's the student revolutions in Europe. And he fell victim to this. Now, people like to say that he's changed at that moment. That's not true. The questions changed for him. He thought the problem was existentialism. Now he's like, no. Marxism is actually a real problem. And so you start seeing him engage with the problem of Marxism more directly starting in 1968. And that becomes a major theme for him until about 1989. Then in 1989, communism falls.
Yeah.
And he sees in this event a work of revelation, a moment of revelation, not something new, but something that is already true, kind of screaming out again. Man, if communism's true, if Marxism's true, then man is pure matter, and there is no meaning, no transcendence. We have no souls. There's no heaven, and there's no God. But that Marxism was able to be overcome because of man's spiritual character, desire for freedom, that this is just true on just a natural level. And he saw that in that event. He saw something about just who we are as human beings revealed there, and he also saw not that God was doing the action necessarily in that way, but he saw a yearning for God in all of that. When you're yearning for the Spirit, you're yearning for God. And then, but after the fall of communism, he sees then the problem of like liberal market capitalism, and it's materialism. And you see it in his talks about Europe. He really focuses on the question of Europe at this time to say that Europe is not going to find its way to shape history through economic means, but rather it's going to find its means to shape history if it gets back to its spiritual roots. That's what can make it distinct in the world. That is what makes it, that's its identity. That's what makes it distinct. So he's always trying to call us back to what I was saying earlier, to this idea of putting God back at the center, to let him see that he really is real and active through the church, through even in mysterious ways, through historical events, not in this like sensationalist apocalyptic sense, but in the sense of, God is alive and active always, and there's always the yearning of man for God, and historical events are in some ways a playing out of that drama. And so he always is playing with this, and it's really a central thing for him to understand what history is so that we can be open to God breaking in today to us. We can encounter him as alive and active, but we need to reform our understanding of history to be able to encounter him that way.
Yeah, not only in terms of the macro picture as well, Father, but obviously that's true of our own personal history too, to see God's hand in that as well. It can be kind of drilled down to our own lives too, and I think his teaching applies there too. And we got to take a quick break right now. Well, a fascinating conversation with Dr. Craig Evans and Father Harrison Ayer here on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, talking about the legacy of Pope Benedict XVI. We'll be right back.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Joined by my guest today, Father Harrison Ayer, Dr. Craig Evans. We're talking about the life, the legacy of Pope Benedict XVI, who was laid to rest today in Rome. And of course, he made a very powerful visit to Ground Zero in New York City during a visit to the United States. And we've got some audio from that to share with you.
God of understanding, overwhelmed by the magnitude of this tragedy, we seek your light and guidance as we confront such terrible events. Grant that those whose lives were spared may live such lives lost here may not have been lost in vain. Comfort and console us, strengthen us in hope, and give us the wisdom and courage to work tirelessly for a world where true peace and love reign among nations and in the hearts of all.
And after he made this prayer, he then blessed the ground at Ground Zero, met with survivors of that horrific event, and just giving everything to the Father. And we got a question here that came from a listener. I'm going to give this to you, Dr. Evans, because you can probably expand on this a little bit. Nicholas in Florida was asking what we were talking about when speaking of Benedict, the prayer of Jesus. That's obviously a reference to the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer, as it were. And you've written, Dr. Evans, a great commentary on Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, obviously is a big part of that, the Lord's Prayer. And Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, in his Jesus of Nazareth series, also wrote about that. What struck you about his take on this issue?
Well, what impresses me is that God is always in the center of things, and that's how Jesus understood it, too. And so, in fact, I think that grows right out of the Old Testament. This is where the prophets understood that whatever came, good or bad, God was sovereign and was in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And so badness never meant we were marooned spiritually, lost, you know, nowhere to go. And I think that's keen. That is so important. And I think that's the problem with society today and the tendency to drift toward either atheism or agnosticism, is that we can't reconcile the human sin and human wickedness with the idea that God is loving. I think we have a low view of God. He's sort of a celestial Santa Claus. And we can't figure out, well, then why are bad things happening? And so that's why it was so profound, this prayer, and we've only heard a piece of it, that Cardinal Ratzinger prayed in 2001 in the aftermath of 9/11. And I think he has the right idea, and this is reflected in his books, and he understands that, both not just in what he says about the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer, but the way he understands the historical Jesus in history and the way he ministers to people and draws people toward God through his teaching, through his word, through his deeds. So that's a profoundness that I think our society doesn't understand in general. It's lost, and we need to call society back to that and understand that the incarnation is about God with us as Emmanuel, that Hebrew expression means. God is with us, not just in Christ, but now in the church and in the gospel. And so I don't think there's any way forward that's positive for humanity if that is not rediscovered and embraced anew.
That's powerfully said, Dr. Evans. And obviously, Pope Benedict had a great confidence in the person of Jesus, and who, as Dr. Evans said, is in the middle of everything. God can be found in the middle of everything. And one of the great themes in his work overall is the truth, is seeking the truth, his confidence in the truth. And because of that, he was able to relate to a lot of different people. And I'm going to ask you this, Father Harrison. He was able to relate to a lot of people in his work in the ecumenical movement, in dealing with non-Christian persons and non-Christian faiths, in his work at the CDF, which is, you know, and he was very unfairly called by a lot of his detractors the Panzer Cardinal, and there was this reputation of him being this incredibly harsh individual, but he was far from that, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've only seen a couple of clips of it. One of the great hidden gems of him is his wicked sense of humor. He would apparently use humor when things were getting tense in the CDF offices. He'd drop a joke to try and ease things out and to bring people back into a fruitful conversation. Because for him, truth isn't just an idea, but truth is a reality because it's a person, Jesus Christ, who is way, truth, and life. And so for him, and truth for him, then, if it's a person, is a reality that has overcome death and reigns now forever with God the Father and the Holy Spirit. And so it can enter into the most opposite things of God, as Christ does through entering into our sin and death, and not be overcome by it. And so he had this great broadness of mind. It's so amazing to me. It really almost, it's hurtful at times to hear people say how narrow-minded he was and how persecutory
he was. So not true.
But it's not true because why? But I mean, he defended the faith, yes. But why? Because he wasn't defending an idea. He wasn't promoting ideas. He was promoting the person of Jesus, whom he loved and knew intimately and wanted everyone else to know. But also often you'd hear, I've read some stories in some of my research about how gentle and open he was to those who came into the CDF offices around questions of some things around orthodoxy and everything. And people would talk about the breadth of his abilities to be willing to be understanding, to let things stand as best as possible, and to just offer certain critiques at times or whatever. But he had such a confidence in the truth that nothing would be overcome. And so he could enter into dialogue and he could find a snippets of the truth in things, you know, the church fathers call it like logos grammaticoi, the seeds of the word. And there's always seeds of the word in everything, even in error. And so he would always open up towards those things. What's true here? And then he would lead it to say, like for example, a lot of things in a way for him, he would say, like, modernity is actually not modern enough, because if it's really going to embrace its notions of freedom and so on and so forth, it can only be fully itself if it's in line with God. And so he would see a truth there. And he would just break it open so that the truth can enter into it and give it its full life and meaning. And so he never wavered. It's why, like I said earlier, like around his homily at John Paul II's funeral, he was able really and truly to say what was on his mind because he knew Christ was in charge. And I think, you know, and there's a lot that's happened in the church in the world in the last 9 years. And I think his silence is probably one of his greatest catecheses ever. Because he's telling us the truth. Because he's telling us Christ is the truth. He's the one we seek always. And he's the one who's victorious. And in my silence, I'm going to let him speak his word as best, you know. And I mean, he understood that the truth always wins. It may not win right now in this moment. It might lose the battle, but it will never lose the war because it's already won the war.
Yeah, wow, that's a powerful word right there. It's already won the war. He has already won the war, and I love that. And he wrote so much. Obviously, he wrote another book that I'm fond of. It's called Truth and Tolerance. And
how so good.
We need both. We really do need both. And he exemplified that in his own life. He was obviously convinced of the truth of the person of Jesus, but yet that enabled him to be, in a sense, tolerant of others' views, to listen to them. And I heard a testimony from somebody who worked with him years ago at the CDF, at the Congregation of the Doctrine for the Faith. And this person said that he would listen to everybody, and he would never cut them off. He would never say, I got to go to another meeting. He would just listen to them, junior staffers, people who were like super opinionated, who maybe didn't know what they were talking about. He never big-timed them. He never, you know, dismissed their ideas. He always was such a great listener. That's what people didn't understand about him. And I think his commitment to the truth, as you said, enabled him to do that. So I think it's just quite beautiful. And Dr. Evans, I just want to give you a last word, if you want to say just one parting word about the late Pope Benedict, anything that you want to get off your chest that we didn't have a chance to cover during this hour.
Well, I will say this, you know, and I'm speaking about area that I know real well, and that's the academic side of things, and it's historical Jesus research and so on. Most books that scholars produce are on the shelves for just a few years. 20 years from now, most of the stuff we publish will be forgotten. But the books that I was going to say Professor Ratzinger, it just wanted to come to my lips. But the books he's produced, especially these Jesus books, but others too, people will be talking about them 20, 30, 40 years from now. His scholarship is not a flash in the pan. And it's because it's more than just plain good scholarship, but there is that pastoral element and theological sensitivity. So I think this will make his legacy a lasting one. And I think that's exactly how it should be.
Yeah, that's amazing. I remember once you and I were in Jerusalem, we were at the Polis Center, and somebody was asking you about some scholars who had kind of gone off the rails in their studies of Jesus. And I remember one guy asked you, as you were explaining about these guys and what they taught, they asked you, hey, Dr. Evans, these guys actually pray? And you were like, I don't know, that's a pretty good question. But we do know this. We do know that Pope Benedict did theology on his knees. He really did seek the face of Jesus, and that did come through in his life, in his ministry, in his just being a disciple of Jesus, not let alone a pope, a priest, and a bishop. But that's a legacy that all of us can emulate, to be sure. I really want to thank my guest today as we looked at the life and legacy of Pope Benedict, Father Harrison Ayer. And you can find him on Twitter, at Father Harrison. You can, F.R. Harrison, by the way, is the handle. Do get his book, Mysterion. It's amazing. We've talked about that on the program before, and I hope to have you back soon. Dr. Craig Evans, his website, craigaevans.com. You can find out about his writings and follow him on Twitter as well, at Dr. Dr. Craig A. Evans. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. God bless you, and I appreciate you joining me today.
Very well.
Thanks so much. God bless you.
Okay. Thank you very much to Dr. Evans and Father Harrison, if you need him. Wow, what a great conversation, and what an amazing pope. What an amazing pope. And I so appreciate the legacy of Pope Benedict, and that continues on. That continues on in his writings. And I encourage you guys to get started. Pick up the Jesus of Nazareth series. It's accessible. And read him. Read his Wednesday audiences. They're amazing. All right, trending is coming up. Patrick Conley, guest hosting. This is Cale Clark. Jim Schaefer produced. Thomas and Gesser took your phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.